Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 22nd. Event Complex logs 214,000 visitors. A report says Midland County Horseshoe's total revenue hits nearly $850,000. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland County Commissioners on Thursday received the Midland County Horseshoe's annual report for a year that included more than 200 events and welcomed more than 200,000 visitors. There are also several upcoming projects. According to Director Stephen Garcia, the Horseshoe hosted 213 events with more than 214,000 attendees. Total revenue was $847,000. Garcia was appointed as director in February 2025 and was subsequently promoted to director after being hired as an assistant director. Quote, "One of the things we came up with and initiated this year was a new mission statement facility, and that was our mission, to drive economic growth and pride in Midland County through a versatile, inclusive space that supports local enterprise and public engagement," Garcia told commissioners. "We made some changes that continued emphasis on customer satisfaction. This year, we also made some changes to policy," end quote. Garcia said the Horseshoe is trying to grow its customer base organically through repeat customers and by bringing in more events to help build the number of events per year. Quote, "We continued with citizen-driven events, and we made a focus on events that were long-term, over multiple days, over the weekends, to help with the area businesses, to help out with hotels and restaurants, because we want to make sure that other businesses are gaining off of our facility. We are driving the Midland County economy," Garcia said. The Horseshoe continued to engage with organizations such as Visit Midland, the Midland Chamber of Commerce, and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Quote, "We hosted events that had high occupancy in our hotel base, and again, that was trying to build economy throughout the city and county as well," he said. Another focus was growing events with an emphasis on bringing in multiple-day events to the Horseshoe. Quote, "We had some lost event days this year, and that was due to a roofing project that we had in the Horseshoe," Garcia told commissioners. "We lost 46 days this year due to that," end quote. He explained that attendance for events in the county's venue included more than 214,000 people and that contract revenue from events was more than $822,000. Quote, "If you have a customer that has a contracted event and they bring in vendors or just general patrons that are coming to see it, they are not going to be responsible for paying for RV spaces or stalls," Garcia explained. "And that brought in an additional $25,000 to us. So, total realized income, this is money that came in altogether combined, just a little under $847,000, end quote. Another improvement, Garcia said, was initiated this year is a post-event survey to all contract holders. Quote, "We look at overall satisfaction, facility quality, and amenities," Garcia said. "We also use Google reviews, and that is something that's just not open to contract holders, but anybody who wants to go online and make a review." Currently, Garcia said the Horseshoe is sitting at 4.5 out of 5 stars on the Google review platform. Quote, We feel pretty good about how we are sitting right now in customer satisfaction, he said. The next thing we want to look at is our social interaction or social media. And we look at two major sources, which are Facebook and Instagram, end quote. For social media visits, Garcia told commissioners that the horseshoe increased from more than 23,000 visits to more than 42,000, an 83% increase over the past year. Another metric was the interactions, which have also increased significantly. Quote, this is something we really like because this is where our customers are, he explained. This is where they are reaching out, and they are looking at the page to constantly see what's going on, what's coming up, and what they can attend, end quote. Commissioner Stephen Valeda thanked Garcia for his service and his communication. Quote, I appreciate the horseshoe being back under the court, he emphasized. When I get a complaint, I usually call you, and you are like, well, here's a solution for that. There's a lot of easy communication. You are doing an excellent job and service to our community, end quote. Garcia said that with some of the policy changes that the horseshoe has implemented, he knows that the county is giving money back to customers. Quote, we know we are leaving money on the table, he said, but we can actually recruit back to us, and that's something more. We want to make sure that we bring back a lot of the goodwill and to make sure that the citizens have a better feeling about the facility as we grow a little bit more, end quote. API says demand decade for oil and gas is close. An executive says people need to understand how important it is. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin residents this week celebrated the iconic oil and gas employees with an event sponsored by the American Petroleum Institute and Petroleum Strategic Partnership. The event featured food and a performance by Roger Krieger. Quote, this series kicked off in November, related Mike Summers, president and chief executive officer of the API in Midland for the celebration, and to moderate a question and answer session with Aaron Hunter, president Permian with ConocoPhillips, at the Midland Chamber of Commerce State of Oil and Gas Luncheon. It began with the television series Landman, he said. The association has formed a partnership with the television show, running ads describing real landmen during the episodes, he said. Quote, we were a little concerned with how the industry would be portrayed, but we realized it would be a positive view, Summers said. He said he's pleased to bring the celebration to Midland, the heart of oil and gas. We felt it was time to celebrate oil and gas. Everybody uses oil and gas, but only 1% work in the industry. People need to understand how important it is, end quote. Summers continued, quote, we're witnessing a change in perception. People are realizing its importance. Landman is a reflection of that realization. Oil and gas are important, and they're here to stay, end quote. In fact, he said, API sees the world on the precipice of a demand decade, with demand expected to rise 50% over the decade, end quote. Quote, we see it even in D.C., even in politicians who opposed oil and gas. Even California Governor Gavin Newsom has approved drilling permits in Bakersfield. It's not just California, it's all over. New York is about to build a pipeline transporting natural gas from Pennsylvania to New York, he said. There has been a sharp decline in crude prices over the last year, and oil field activity has trended lower for the last couple of years. Summers said the industry is used to ups and downs and currently employs a resilient workforce, and oil companies are well capitalized. Quote, the rig count no longer gives an accurate view of the industry. The industry is much more efficient. The rig count is down, but production is up, he said, citing efficiency gains and technological advances. Still, he acknowledged the industry can still be impacted by international markets, most recently Venezuela and Iran. Combined oil production from the two nations doesn't even come close to U.S. output or even Permian Basin output, he said. Quote, the U.S. will be the world energy leader, and that's good for national and energy security, Summers said. Youth football team recognized for title win. 12-under team defeated others from Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia. The story was written by Luke Diaz. The West Texas Buffs, a youth football team that has participated in the nationwide American Youth Football, or AYF, for the last 3 years, recently won the AYF's 12-under division championship. In recognition for this, the team was honored by Midland City Council with a proclamation and some time off from school. Quote, what makes this team special is that they weren't made up of all-stars, said Councilman John Norman. They've been playing together for a while, and nobody can tell me we don't have the talent out here in West Texas. End quote. Coached by Simon Cobos, the 12-under team has participated in a variety of competitions over the last several months, including one in Las Vegas, culminating in the Division II National Championship Tournament, where they served as the representative for the Desert Mountain region. The tournament was held during the first half of December in Naples, Florida. There, the Buffs defeated teams from Pennsylvania and Ohio before defeating West Virginia in the championship game. Quote, you don't just show up to the championship and win, said Mayor Lori Blong. You got to put in the work day after day after day, practicing and doing all of that work in advance. So thank you for what you've done and for the way that you've represented our community. End quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 22nd. Kenneth L. Zoller died November 26th in Lufkin, Texas, at the age of 71. Ken was born on January 25th, 1954, in Midland, the middle child to Marvin Zoller and Sue Elliott Zoller. The family moved briefly to Roswell and Amarillo before returning to Midland in 1960. He graduated from Midland High School in 1972. After graduating from the University of Texas in 1976, Ken returned from Austin to Midland and began his career as a CPA in public practice, then for family oil and gas companies. He retired in 2021 as the chief financial officer for H.L. Brown Operating. He served on charitable boards for many causes close to his heart. Ken met his wife of 45 years, Cindy, in downtown Midland on their lunch break in 1979. They married in 1980 and welcomed daughters Catherine and Kimberly in 1985 and 1988. Ken was preceded in death by his parents, Marvin Zoller and Sue Elliott Zoller, his brother, Bruce Zoller, and his nephew, Kenny Zoller. He is survived by his wife, Cindy Zoller of Midland, daughter Catherine Zoller Brown, and husband Michael of Cedar Creek, daughter Kimberly Zoller of Midland, sister Tanya Zoller Cruz, and husband Jim of Burney, Texas, as well as several nieces and nephews. A A celebration of Ken's life will be held on Saturday, January 24th at 2 o'clock at the branch at NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to High Sky Children's Ranch, Sibley Nature Center, and the Big Bend Natural History Association. Tilda Stewart Jones, born March 21, 1944, passed away peacefully on January 16th at the age of 81 in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where she lived with her daughter and son-in-law, Dwight and Jeanette Pope. Born and raised in Midland, Texas, Tilda enjoyed many friendships and employments until finding her calling as a certified nurse's aide. She married Daniel L. Jones and enjoyed many years traveling and living in Midland. She is survived by her children, Frank James, wife Dana, Charlotte Schrum and her husband William, Jeanette Pope and her husband Dwight. Also survived by her sister-in-law, Cecilia Stewart, and several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, Benjamin and Annie Bell Stewart, daughter Donna Gail James, sister Martha Hector, brother James Eldon Stewart, her husband Daniel L. Jones, and her daughter Verna Ann James. Burial will be at Serenity Memorial Gardens on Thursday, January 22nd at 1 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Garden Center in Midland, Texas. Services entrusted to Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Raul Perez Flores, age 90, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, January 7th. Rosary will be Friday, January 23rd at 9 a.m., with a memorial mass to follow at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Commitment of cremains to follow at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, January 17th, 2026. Religion. There is no substitute for perseverance, by William F. Holland, Jr., Ph.D., ordained and licensed Christian minister. When it comes to finding our place in this world, let's consider two categories. The first one, let's call floating down the river. Imagine someone napping in a small boat without a compass or a paddle and not caring about where they are going. Having a spectator mentality, they have yet to understand the importance of having an intentional direction and instead settle for just hoping for the best. They are comfortable with what they do not know and believe that everything will somehow be all right. Our second way of thinking involves listening and developing an awareness of our personal accountability to ourselves, those around us, and of course, God, the one who made us. Until we embrace the reality that He has a specific meaning and purpose for our lives, we will not fulfill our potential. As a substitute teacher, I have the honor to help children learn, and while in this position, I observe different types of personalities and attitudes. I notice that those who are eager to absorb knowledge and excel are enthusiastic about all subjects. I believe when kids are encouraged at home and education is a priority, this transfers over to the student as it opens their eyes to encouraging possibilities and opportunities. On the other hand, when children are looking out the window and doodling on their papers instead of answering the questions, it seems they are not only bored and avoiding the subject matter, but have made a mental decision to refuse to learn. Do some have a resistance to change because they are afraid of failing? Being a minister, I also volunteer at our local detention center a couple of times a month, where I speak to the inmates about God and the Christian life. For those who ask God to intervene and agree to let go of their ways, our team will baptize and serve them communion and try to help them all we can. I've heard some heartbreaking stories from these individuals, and often they testify about having a hard life at home when they were kids. They lost interest in school, started running with a bad crowd, and it's been a downhill slide ever since. Some admit they are on the bottom, with terrible personal problems, and have burned every bridge. But of course, it's never too late to ask for God's help. God's love encourages and motivates us, but another aspect of success is to realize there are certain conditions and responsibilities on our part for His plan to be fully activated. It will require surrendering our will to Him. You see, with God being the potter and us being the clay, it's critical to accept the fact that we do not conveniently add God to the plans we already have, but rather we must allow Him to transform us into His brand new creation. One of the basic attitudes I see all the time is, I don't care. So what makes people rise from the ashes of apathy, rebellion, and discouragement? Well, personal change is not easy, and anyone who advertises how wonderful it is to sacrifice, suffer, and step into a lifestyle completely opposite to their comfort zone is not being honest. There's nothing wrong with reading books about how others have conquered their demons. But even if someone understands what it will take, this does not automatically mean they will do it. Sadly, many are only trying to survive today without a desire to plan for tomorrow. If you've ever tried to help someone finding their direction, you understand when I say we cannot force anyone to do anything, especially those who are not willing to help themselves. In every area of life, the ones who desire a healthy state of being must comprehend the truth about their own responsibilities and be willing to do something about it. Beyond the motivational seminars, the Bible studies, and achievement formulas, it will take a personal revelation, an enlightenment of the mind and soul, to have faith in ourselves the way God has hope in us. Whether we are young or old, being an overcomer requires seeking, praying, and working, and living in denial and blaming everyone for our problems only makes it worse. I have compassion for those whose parents failed them, and know those who still struggle from neglect. Life has always seemed like a huge mountain that was impossible to climb. There is no substitute for perseverance. As it's true, we cannot lower the mountain. Therefore, we must elevate ourselves. Read more about the Christian life at BillyHollandMinistries.com.
TSA to charge $45 to verify ID for travelers without real ID starting February 1st. Travelers planning flights in the coming weeks may want to double-check their wallets now. The clock is ticking for travelers who still don't have a real ID. Beginning February 1st, the Transportation Security Administration will require anyone without an acceptable form of identification to either present valid credentials or pay $45 to complete the agency's confirm.id identity verification process in order to fly. TSA says the process will vary by airport and strongly recommends travelers pay the fee online in advance, warning that on-site processing could significantly slow security lines. Acceptable forms of ID include Real ID compliant driver's licenses or other state photo identity cards issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles or equivalent. If you are not sure if your ID complies with Real ID, check with your state Department of Motor Vehicles. A temporary driver's license is not an acceptable form of identification. State-issued enhanced driver's license or enhanced ID. U.S. passport, U.S. passport card. DHS trusted traveler's cards. Global Entry Nexus Sentry Fast. U.S. Department of Defense ID, including IDs issued to dependents. Permanent residence card. Border crossing card. An acceptable photo ID issued by a federally recognized tribal nation / Indian tribe, including enhanced tribal cards. HSPD-12 PIV card. Foreign government issued passport. Canadian provincial driver's license or Indian and Northern Affairs Canada card. Transportation worker identification credential. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Employment Authorization Card, I-766. U.S. Merchant Mariner Credential, Veteran Health Identification Card. Starting May 7, 2025, the Real ID law was implemented, where all travelers need an acceptable form of ID. Real ID came from an act passed by Congress in 2005, following a recommendation from the 9/11 Commission to create nationwide security standards for state-issued identification documents. 94% of passengers already have their Real ID or another form of acceptable identification, TSA reported. Quote, identity verification is essential to traveler safety, end quote, said Adam Stahl, senior official performing the duties of deputy administrator for TSA. Quote, beginning February 1st, travelers who do not present an acceptable form of ID at our security checkpoints and still want to fly can pay a $45 fee and undergo the TSA Confirm.ID process. The security of the traveling public is our top priority, end quote. TSA continues to urge travelers to obtain a Real ID or carry another acceptable form of identification to avoid delays. The policy takes effect February 1st. This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. County Health Assessment Complete. Making Midland the healthiest community in Texas is Midland Health's vision. In order to work toward that vision, Midland Health must first understand the community's health needs. In 2025, Midland Health completed a new Community Health Needs Assessment, or CHNA. The CHNA is a systematic, data-driven approach to determining the health status, behaviors, and needs of residents in Midland County. The CHNA begins with an extensive process of gathering quantitative and qualitative data, including surveys with key informants and residents, statistics, and demographics. Once all data was reviewed, Midland Health prioritized the areas of top concern. Priorities from the CHNA build a framework for initiatives over the next few years through an implementation plan. The implementation plan is designed to continue community outreach and develop new programs to address the health needs of the community. The entire health system will play a part in this CHNA and make strides to lead health care for Greater Midland. The full report is publicly accessible for those who want to learn more about the health of the community. Visit midlandcounty.healthforecast.net to learn more about the CHNA conducted by Midland Health. Take a deeper look into the key priorities. Access to health care services. Barriers to access, skipping or stretching prescriptions, primary care physician ratio. Diabetes. Diabetes prevalence, key informants. Diabetes ranked as a top concern. Disabling conditions, Alzheimer's disease deaths. Heart disease and stroke, leading cause of death, key informants. Heart disease and stroke ranked as a top concern. Infant health and family planning. Prenatal care, teen births. Mental health provider ratio, key informants. Mental health ranked as a top concern. Sexual health, chlamydia incidence. Substance use. Key informants, substance use ranked as a top concern. Partnering with Midland Health teams, outside organizations, and the community will be vital in executing the CHNA implementation objectives. Please reach out if you or your organization can help in any of the priority areas. The community is stronger when working together to create the healthiest community in Texas. More information and Previous CHNAs can be viewed at midlandhealth.org/CHNA. Letter writing enjoys revival of connection. At a time when productivity means optimizing every second and screens blur the line between work and home, some people are slowing down and disconnecting by looking to communication devices from the past. Tactile activities ranging from writing letters and typewriter clubs to TikTok communities showcasing calligraphy skills and wax seals are giving retro writing instruments a resurgence. More than quaint throwbacks, the pursuits provide their enthusiasts with opportunities to reduce their technology use, be more intentional with time, and build meaningful connections with others. Quote, I feel as though my pen pals are my friends. I don't think of them much differently than if I were chatting with a friend on the phone in a coffee shop or at another person's house, end quote, said Melissa Bobbitt, 42, a devoted letter writer who corresponds with about a dozen people from her home in Claremont, California, and has had up to 40 pen pals at one time. Quote, focusing on one person and really reading what they are saying and sharing what's on your heart is almost like a therapy session, end quote. Ink, paper, and other tools that once were the only way to send a message from afar are continuing to bring people together from around the world. Below, some of them explain the appeal of snail mail and give recommendations for getting started. Writing as an escape. In a society shaped by constant availability, hands-on hobbies like writing letters and scrapbooking require focus and patience. The act of picking up a pen, sealing an envelope with wax, and laying out pages may yield aesthetically pleasing results, but it also creates a space for reflection. Stefania Kontopoulos, a 21-year-old student in Chicago, said it can be hard to put her phone and computer away, especially when it seems all of her friends and peers are on social media, and her classes and personal life revolve around being online. Quote, there are times when I'm with my friends and at dinner, I'll realize we're all on our phones, end quote, Kontopoulos said, adding that she tries to put her phone down at those moments. Kontopoulos also unplugs consciously by sending postcards to her family and friends, scrapbooking, and junk journaling, which involves repurposing everyday materials like tickets and receipts to document memories or ideas. She says going to the post office has become an activity she does with her mother back home in Kansas and includes sharing stories with the postal workers, people she would not have routinely encountered. Fostering community. Writing and sending letters is nostalgic for Kiki Clausen, who lives in Ontario, Canada. The 28-year-old says it helps her feel more connected to her late mother, who was a member of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, which represents mail carriers and other postal employees. In October 2024, Clausen launched the Lucky Duck Mail Club, a subscription-based monthly mail service that sends participants a piece of her art, an inspiring quote and message. She says her membership includes more than 1,000 people across, at most, 36 countries. Quote, when I sit down, I'm forced to reflect and choose my words carefully, end quote, Clausen said. Quote, it also lends itself to vulnerability because it is easier to write down how you are feeling. I've had people write me back, and I've cried hearing so many touching stories. I think for a lot of people, paper creates a safe space. You write it down, send it off, and don't really think about it after, end quote. For Bobbitt, who has corresponded by mail for years, there is a, quote, grand excitement, end quote, when she opens her mailbox and finds something that is not a bill or advertisement. Quote, if we all filled each other's mailboxes with letters, we would all be kinder and, at the very least, won't dread checking our mailboxes, end quote, she said. Bobbitt says she first joined a pen pal club in second or third grade and later was connected to more writers through Postcrossing, an online project that partners people around the world to send and receive postcards. How to get started. While writing letters and engaging in other vintage pursuits might seem accessible, it is not always easy to get involved. Kontopoulos says she decided it was important for her to reprioritize her time. Quote, the older I get, the more I realize how much time had been wasted on my phone, end quote, she said. Creating space to explore allowed her to discover the hobbies she loved doing enough to make them a priority, she said. There are many hobbies to consider, some of which don't require expensive tools or hours of free time. Frequenting spaces where communities centered around these hobbies gather can be a way to learn about the different activities. Clausen says that based on posts she's seeing on her social media feeds, reviving vintage writing instruments and small tactile pleasures might be on the verge of becoming trendy. Quote, the girls are going analog in 2026, end quote, she said. New guidelines say to double protein, but experts are wary. Protein just got a big boost from U.S. health officials. The latest federal dietary guidelines tell Americans to, quote, prioritize protein foods at every meal, end quote, and advise increasing daily intake up to double the amount of previous recommendations. Quote, we are ending the war on protein, end quote, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said in a White House post on social media. The guidance emphasizes red meat, whole milk, and other animal sources, while downplaying plant-based offerings. But top nutrition experts question the protein push, saying Americans already consume more protein than they need, and there's no new evidence that people need to drastically ramp up consumption. For many people, eating much more protein could lead to more fat and more cases of diabetes, they say. Quote, if you're actively building muscle with strength or resistance training, more protein can help, end quote, said Dr. Dariush Mazaferian, a Tufts University nutrition expert. Quote, otherwise you're getting enough, end quote. Others worry that the advice will accelerate companies encouraging Americans to embrace extra protein in foods, including cereals and snacks. Sales of protein-enriched packaged food will increase at a time, quote, when one of the main messages is eat real food, eat whole foods, end quote, said Christopher Gardner, a nutrition expert at Stanford University. Quote, I think they're going to confuse the public in a big way, end quote. Here's what you need to know about the recommendations. What is protein and how much do people need? Protein is a macronutrient that is in every cell in the human body. It's vital for growth and repair of muscle, bones, skin, hair, and other organs and tissues. It's made of building blocks called amino acids, including some that the body doesn't make and must come from food. For decades, the U.S. dietary guidelines and other sources have recommended that people consume 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight each day, or about 54 grams daily for a 150-pound person. The new recommendation advises people to consume 1.2 grams to 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, up to double the previous advice. Why did the new dietary guidelines change? The previous protein recommendations were calculated to prevent a nutrition deficiency, according to a review published with the new dietary guidelines. Quote, it represents the lowest intake that maintains equilibrium in most healthy adults, but does not reflect the intake required to maintain optimal muscle mass or metabolic function under all conditions, end quote, the review said. The new document relied on evidence from 30 studies that looked at the effects of higher protein diets on weight management and nutrient adequacy. It concluded that protein intakes well above the previous guidance, quote, are safe and compatible with good health, end quote. What's the harm of eating more protein? Nutrition experts noted that trials focusing on weight reduction aren't typically used to make general dietary recommendations. And in an article in Journal of the American Medical Association, Mazaferian said there is little evidence that, quote, higher protein builds muscle or provides other health benefits, end quote. Letter writing enjoys revival of connection. At a time when productivity means optimizing every second and screens blur the line between work and home, some people are slowing down and disconnecting by looking to communication devices from the past. Tactile activities ranging from writing letters and typewriter clubs to TikTok communities showcasing calligraphy skills and wax seals are giving retro writing instruments a resurgence. More than quaint throwbacks, the pursuits provide their enthusiasts with opportunities to reduce their technology use, be more intentional with time, and build meaningful connections with others. Quote, I feel as though my pen pals are my friends. I don't think of them much differently than if I were chatting with a friend on the phone in a coffee shop or at another person's house, end quote, said Melissa Bobbitt, 42, a devoted letter writer who corresponds with about a dozen people from her home in Claremont, California, and has had up to 40 pen pals at one time. Quote, focusing on one person and really reading what they are saying and sharing what's on your heart is almost like a therapy session, end quote. Ink, paper, and other tools that once were the only way to send a message from afar are continuing to bring people together from around the world. Below, some of them explain the appeal of snail mail and give recommendations for getting started. Writing is an escape. In a society shaped by constant availability, hands-on hobbies like writing letters and scrapbooking require focus and patience. The act of picking up a pen, sealing an envelope with wax, and laying out pages may yield aesthetically pleasing results, but it also creates a space for reflection. Stefania Kontopoulos, a 21-year-old student in Chicago, said it can be hard to put her put her phone and computer away, especially when it seems all of her friends and peers are on social media, and her classes and personal life revolve around being online. Quote, there are times when I'm with my friends and at dinner, I'll realize we are all on our phones, end quote. Kontopinas said, adding that she tries to put her phone down at those moments. Kontopinas also unplugs consciously by sending postcards to her family and friends, scrapbooking, and junk journaling, which involves repurposing everyday materials like tickets and receipts to document memories or ideas. She says going to the post office has become an activity she does with her mother back home in Kansas and includes sharing stories with the postal workers, people she would not have routinely encountered. Fostering community. Writing and sending letters is nostalgic for Kiki Clausen, who lives in Ontario, Canada. The 28-year-old says it helps her feel more connected to her late mother, who was a member of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, which represents mail carriers and other postal employees. In October 2024, Clausen launched the Lucky Duck Mail Club, a subscription-based monthly mail service that sends participants a piece of her art, an inspiring quote and message. She says her membership includes more than 1,000 people across, at most, 36 countries. Quote, when I sit down, I'm forced to reflect and choose my words carefully, end quote, Clausen said. Quote, it also lends itself to vulnerability because it is easier to write down how you are feeling. I've had people write me back, and I've cried hearing so many touching stories. I think for a lot of people, paper creates a safe space. You write it down, send it off, and don't really think about it after, end quote. For Bobbitt, who has corresponded by mail for years, there is a, quote, grand excitement, end quote, when she opens her mailbox and finds something that is not a bill or advertisement. Quote, if we all filled each other's mailboxes with letters, we would all be kinder and, at the very least, won't dread checking our mailboxes, end quote, she said. Bobbitt says she first joined a pen pal club in second or third grade and later was connected to more writers through Postcrossing, an online project that partners people around the world to send and receive postcards. How to get started. While writing letters and engaging in other vintage pursuits might seem accessible, it is not always easy to get involved. Kontopinas says she decided it was important for her to reprioritize her time. Quote, the older I get, the more I realize how much time had been wasted on my phone, end quote, she said. Creating space to explore allowed her to discover the hobbies she loved doing enough to make them a priority, she said. There are many hobbies to consider, some of which don't require expensive tools or hours of free time. Frequenting spaces where communities centered around these hobbies gather can be a way to learn about the different activities. Clausen says that based on posts she's seeing on her social media feeds, reviving vintage writing instruments and small tactile pleasures might be on the verge of becoming trendy. Quote, the girls are going analog in 2026, end quote, she said. Women's health. Strength training is crucial after menopause. How to make the most of your workouts. When Sarah Baldessaro turned 50, she took stock of her health and began working with a fitness coach on strength training, a type of exercise that's crucial for women in midlife. Quote, now I would say I'm stronger overall than I ever have been at any age, end quote, said Baldessaro, 52, of Alexandria, Virginia. Quote, my fitness level is much more like when I was in my early 30s, end quote. Medical experts say strength training keeps bones and muscles healthy after menopause when estrogen loss speeds up a reduction in bone density and contributes to the gradual loss of muscle mass. This type of exercise, which involves working against resistance, also helps women maintain a healthy weight and stay on track with New Year's resolutions about fitness. Quote, people underestimate how powerful it is, end quote, said Dr. Christina DeAngelis, an OBGYN at Penn State Health. But what should your workout look like and how do you get started? Strength training with weights. Physical therapist Hilary Granat said bone and muscle health are intertwined. When muscle pulls on bone during resistance training, it stimulates bone-building cells. Resistance can come from dumbbells, free weights, or machines such as rowers. One example of a strength training exercise is the chest press, which involves lying back on a bench or the ground, pressing weights up from chest level and then lowering them. It's important to work, quote, close to muscle failure, end quote, said Granat, who owns Core Total Wellness in Washington, D.C. Quote, you really have to push yourself, end quote. That means lifting weights that are heavy enough to be challenging and doing somewhere between 6 and 30 repetitions. You'll know you're working hard enough if you start slowing down in tempo or speed, or can't do another repetition in good form, she said. A good rule of thumb for an exercise like a bicep curl is to lift weights somewhere between 5 pounds and 20 pounds, with novices starting at the lower end. Baldessaro has worked her way up to 20 pounds for some exercises, incorporating techniques she learned from Granat. She said the health coach has helped her expand her workouts beyond mostly cardio. While she still does aerobic exercises, quote, the strength training has really been the difference maker for me, end quote, she said. No weights, no problem. Building up bones and muscles doesn't necessarily require equipment. You can also do push-ups, squats, lunges, sit-ups, crunches, or planks. Another good exercise is squatting down with your back against a wall. Even the simple act of getting into and out of a chair can be helpful, DeAngelis said. Quote, you have to engage your core going from sitting to standing, end quote, she said. Quote, that also allows you to work on your coordination and balance, end quote. There's also what Granat calls, quote, impact training, end quote. Exercises like walking, hiking, running, jumping, skipping, and climbing stairs. On the high impact end of the spectrum is a, quote, rebound jump, end quote, which involves jumping up and down from a step 10 to 30 times. Quote, we're not talking about jumping hard and fast and a lot, end quote, she said, adding that 3 times a week is enough. Experts say middle-aged women should also perform balance exercises, which play a crucial role in preventing falls that can break or fracture bones. These include Tai Chi, yoga, or even standing on one leg while brushing your teeth for around 30 seconds. All of these exercises are great for younger people too, experts say, especially since bone mass peaks at 25 to 30 years old and slowly begins to lessen around age 40. After seeing how strength training has improved her life, Baldessaro advises others, quote, don't wait, get started, end quote. Athletes, what we can learn from Olympians. If winning gold medals were the only standard, almost all Olympic athletes would be considered failures. A clinical psychologist with the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, Emily Clark's job when the Winter Games open in Italy on February 6th, is to help athletes interpret what it means to be successful. Should gold medals be the only measure? Part of a 15-member staff providing psychological services, Clark nurtures athletes accustomed to triumph, but who invariably risk failure. The staff deals with matters termed, quote, mental health and mental performance, end quote. They include topics such as motivation, anger management, anxiety, eating disorders, family issues, trauma, depression, sleep, handling pressure, travel, and so forth. Clark's area includes stress management, the importance of sleep and getting high achievers to perform at their best, and avoid the temptation of looking only at results. Quote, a lot of athletes these days are aware of the mental health component of not just sport, but of life, end quote, Clark said in an interview with the Associated Press. Quote, this is an area where athletes can develop skills that can extend a career or make it more enjoyable, end quote. Redefining success. The United States is expected to take about 235 athletes to the Winter Olympics and about 70 more to the Paralympics. But here's the truth. Quote, most of the athletes who come through Team USA will not win a gold medal, end quote, Clark said. Quote, that's the reality of elite sport, end quote. Here are the numbers. The United States won gold medals in 9 events in the last Winter Games in Beijing in 2022. According to Dr. Bill Milan, an esteemed shoulder surgeon and Olympic historian, 70.8% of winter and summer Olympic athletes go to only one Olympics. Few are famous and successful like swimmer Michael Phelps or skiers Michaela Schifrin or Lindsey Vonn. Clark said she often delivers the following message to Olympians and Paralympians. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance. Focus on the process. Savor the moment. Quote, your job is not to win a gold medal. Your job is to do the thing, and the gold medal is what happens when you do your job, end quote, she said. Quote, some of this might be realigning what success looks like, end quote, she added. Quote, and some of this is developing resilience in the face of setbacks and failure, end quote. Clark preaches staying on task under pressure and improving through defeat. Quote, we get stronger by pushing ourselves to a limit where we're at our maximum capacity and then recovering, end quote, she said. Quote, when we get stressed, it impacts our attention. Staying on task or staying in line with what's important is what we try to train for, end quote. A few testimonials. Kendall Gretsch has won 4 gold medals at the Summer and Winter Paralympics. She credits some of her success to the USOPC's mental health services, and she described the value this way. Quote, we have a sports psychologist who travels with us for most of our season, end quote, she said. Quote, just being able to touch base with them and getting that reminder of why you are here. What is that experience you're looking for, end quote. American figure skater Alicia Liu is the 2025 world champion and was 6th in the 2022 Olympics. She's a big believer in sports psychology and should be among the favorites in Italy. Quote, I work with a sports psychologist, end quote, she said, without giving a name. Quote, she's incredible, like the MVP, end quote. Of course, MVP stands not for most valuable person or most valuable player, for, quote, most valuable psychologist, end quote. Quote, I mean, she's very helpful, end quote, Liu added. Vaughn, I just did it myself. American downhill skier Vaughn will race in Italy in her 6th Olympics. At 41, she's coming off nearly 6 years in retirement and will be racing on a knee made of titanium. 2-time Olympic champion Michaela Dorfmeister has suggested in jest that Vaughn, quote, should see a psychologist, end quote, for attempting such a thing in a very dangerous sport where downhill skiers reach speeds of 80 miles per hour. Vaughn shrugged off the comments and joked a few months ago that she didn't grow up using a sports psychologist. She said her counseling came from taping messages on the tips of her skis that read, quote, stay forward or hands up, end quote. Quote, I just did it myself, end quote, she said. Quote, I do a lot of self-talk in the starting gate, end quote. On sleep. Quote, sleep is an area where athletes tend to struggle for a number of reasons, end quote, Clark said. Listing issues such as travel schedules, late practices, injuries, and life-related stress. Quote, we have a lot of athletes who are parents, and a lot of sleep is going to be disrupted in the early stages of parenting, end quote, she said. Quote, we approach sleep as a real part of performance, but it can be something that gets deprioritized when days get busy, end quote. Clark suggests the following. No caffeine after 3 p.m., mitigate stress before bedtime, schedule sleep at about the same time daily, sleep in a dark room and get 7 to 9 hours. Danny Arabich is a 2-time Paralympian and will be skiing in the upcoming Paralympics. She said in a recent interview that she avails herself of many psychological services provided by the USOPC. Quote, I've started tracking my sleep, end quote, she said, naming Clark as a counselor. Quote, especially being an athlete who has multiple jobs, sleeping is going to be your number one savior at all times. It's the thing that, you know, helps mental clarity, end quote.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife tired of being told to whom she can talk after 40 years. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married for 40 years and share the same friendships, joint, his and mine. We have camped, hosted parties, and traveled with the same friends. My problem is, my husband says I'm not allowed to speak privately with the males in our group unless I first confirm with him what I'm talking about. He also gives me the third degree about my visits with the wives, mainly to find out if their husbands were around. In all our married years, I have never given him reason to think there's anything going on between me and anybody else. I have always held him in high regard. I consider him to be somebody with honesty and integrity, and I love him wholeheartedly. Where in the world does he get off trying to order me around and think that I can't ask a question of his friends or visit with his friends and their wives without asking his permission? This has been a long-time situation between us, and I'm tired of it, almost to the point of leaving him and enjoying what's left of my life in peace with all kinds of people and relationships. Please help. Signed, Put in a Corner in Oregon. Dear Put, why didn't you write to me about this 39 years ago? Your husband may be a man with honesty and integrity, but he is also someone with bottomless insecurities and an insatiable need to control you. I am surprised it has taken 40 years of this for you to finally say to yourself, enough. I would recommend marriage counseling for the two of you, but I seriously question his ability to change. Counseling for you alone might give you the courage to draw the line. Dear Abby, After I found the courage to leave my abusive marriage, it has been difficult. My family refuses to accept that a woman could have actually abused a man, and they are very skeptical. Even after my mother and sister attended therapy with me, they still question my honesty, something that has never been questioned before. Still, I have an amazing 9-year-old daughter from the marriage. She is part of the reason I had to leave her mother. There was no way I could model acceptance of that abuse after her mother refused to seek help. I tried. Now, 2 years later, I'm in a healthy relationship with another man. While my daughter is overjoyed because he treats both of us well, my family continues to attack me, even saying they were no longer going to speak to me. They say this is why I left my ex, even though it is not true. I didn't anticipate this either. My mother, who refuses to talk to me, recently let me know she wants to take me to court for the right to see my daughter. My daughter no longer wants to spend any time with her after seeing how she treated me. I don't think allowing visitation would be in my daughter's best interest. Should I be worried? Signed, Unresolved in Ohio. Dear Unresolved, not every state has laws on the books that govern grandparents' rights. Ohio, where you reside, is one of those that does. Because your question is legal in nature, and you are rightly worried, the person you should ask would be a lawyer familiar with family law. I understand why you are worried, and you have my sympathy. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.